this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP futures down 64. That's not good. NASDAQ futures down 459. This is after a down day yesterday, so this is not fun for anybody who's long here this morning. I think a lot of this started over in Asia with the Nikkei down 2,600. That's 4%. Hang Seng down 446, that's almost 1.8%, and Shanghai is down 3%, so global chip sell-off continues, so there you go. Some of the stocks yesterday, Microsoft traded 405 at about 230, now it's 393, so some of this stuff is taking a hit here in the last little bit. Earnings last night were Netflix, and it's down $7, that's almost 10%. So right now, things are not good for the guys. The weird part, would you have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, good morning.
The weird part, Kevin, is yesterday, out of the blue, with oil prices sneaking up and gas prices, the transportation average was up 3%. So we've got huge, crazy rotation in the midst of all this other stuff, which is, I don't know, I've never seen anything quite like it, to be honest with you.
Well, transportation, if you were to back up to last spring, most of the people who were involved in transportation already baked in the anticipation, you know, based on the original invasion, based on and the spike up in oil prices. They baked that in, and they baked that in long term. That wasn't just like we're going to watch this week to week and see what happens. They actually put it into their forecast for the next, you know, 18 to 24 months. So I don't think just from a strictly from a transportation performance standpoint versus what they predicted, and versus what they are predicting their earnings and the impact to be, I think for those it's pretty much already baked into what they do, and you're not going to see that kind of volatility that like you see in some other areas.
Well, up 3% and a day when everybody else is down, 3%, that's a sleepy average, for God's sake. 3% is a lot.
Yeah, well, that is. And it's strictly based on, activity. And we've seen the manufacturing index activity is still up. So, as long as that continues, you make stuff, you gotta ship it somewhere.
Well, that's the truth. I'm just saying it's kind of odd to have one part of the market so far up and the other one so far down on the same day. I mean, It's happening more. It's happening more and more, but I don't know. I really am astounded by the split in the Magnificent Seven people, or actually the top ten, which you'd call high tech something, where every day half of them are down and half of them are up. And more soon, it's almost like yesterday we were joking in the office. If you the further the Nasdaq went down, the more you wanted to buy Microsoft, and all of a sudden that turnaround crept out. So anyway, that's what that all is. But it seemed like it started over in Japan relatively early, which I'm not sure what the news was over there, but mostly in the chip area. So, that's where that all is. But, of course, in Chicago, the hardest part here is just breathing. I mean,
it caught up to us over here yesterday.
Well, there was a dude on TV last night. You know, I don't know if it's...
Although I cut the grass last night and didn't die.
Well, there you go. I don't know what the particulate measurement is, Kevin, if it's particles per foot or whatever the hell it is.
I think the measurement should be, did Kevin die or not?
Well, okay, there you go. But the highest we ever were was like 2 years ago, or 2.5 years, whenever the last time we had these fires, the highest we ever were was 277. You know, days was 250, 240, that kind of thing. Yesterday was 901. It was over three times worse than the worst day we've ever had.
Yeah, it's a PM2.5. I've got a meter on that
measure
such stuff.
Well, yesterday when I pull out on Clybourne, Clybourne's aimed, it's an angle street. It's aimed right for the Hancock building. So usually I can see the Hancock building. Yesterday I could see a shadow of it in the fog. And now this morning I couldn't see it all. But I mean, there's a building here, the old post office, that's maybe two blocks away, and it's, you know, you can make it out, but it's like a deep fog. I mean, they canceled the fire game last night, the soccer game. You know,
it's not quite that bad by me, but it's when you look across the lake, it looks like it's raining.
Ah.
You know, if you look out the window and you look at it, and you know, if we're getting a pretty good rainfall, it just kind of blurs things a little bit. It's looking across, that's what it looks like here.
I mean, there was nobody. There's a few restaurants here that are outdoor areas. There's nobody outside.
Oh, a lot of restaurants wouldn't open outside. They're not going to make their servers go out in this.
Yeah, it's well, hopefully we get a little rain and a little wind, and they claim by tonight or tomorrow might be pretty well gone. But it'd be nice. I mean, if you really have a lung issue, this is not good.
Oh yeah, it is definitely not.
I'm thinking I have to go replace all the filters, car, house, you name it. Huh? Anyway, well, we got the market kind of doing a.
It's those damn Canadians. They're trying to kill us.
I know. I guess it's worse in Boston or someplace. I wonder if they're going to cancel Major League Baseball games tonight.
Well, Major League Baseball would be at risk, and it's conceivable that the World Cup Championship game would be at risk. Although, if they get the rain and the cold front, that probably will be enough to allow it to move ahead.
Well, if we get a little rain, I bet everybody's car is going to look pretty good. But all this dust in the rain landing on your car.
Yeah, I'll just go through the car wash.
Yeah.
I have the monthly subscription, so
they actually had it.
I don't clean bugs off the windshield. I go to the car wash.
Actually, you know, there's a guy on the south side. He's like 42nd in Michigan or someplace. And he said that the last time it was nowhere near this bad. But when it rained, he normally did 100 and some cars on a Saturday. He did something like 500. Everybody just looked at their car. They were just disgusted. That's a good thing. Anywho, so that's where that all is. The market's down. We have interest rates that have been creeping up a little bit. We had a speech last night that I listened to. And
yeah, you were worried yesterday about him canceling the election. Did he do it?
He didn't do it last night, no.
Oh, okay. You still worried about that?
I think he's starting.
I see.
Well, you know, when people talk, I mean, you start to fact check. They said on BBM this morning, this is not my comment, they said the president, and this is just a news blurb, they go, he rattled off all kinds of problems with all the elections. No problems in any of the ones that he won. Like, okay, then. But anyway, I don't think anybody wants anybody hacking around the election. I don't know what the... I've not been a huge fan of mail-in voting myself ever. So, of course, then again, I'm also somebody who can walk 100 yards down the block and there's my voting place. And for some reason, I don't know where you can come back from any of this stuff, because I've looked somewhere, and there's how many polling places have closed in the last 10 years. I think if you wouldn't let people...
You're having everybody doing mail-in balloting. Why do you need polling places?
I'm not sure. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg here. I'm saying if all of a sudden you... I'm not a fan, I just said, of this mail-in voting. But
I know, but...
But if all of a sudden you said...
It only makes sense that if you don't have people going to the polls, you don't need as many polling places.
I get it. What I'm saying is... If you all of a sudden said, okay, we're not going to have any mail-in voting unless you actually are out of town or you're in the military or something, which should be the reason for it, where's everybody going to go? I mean, so I don't know.
I would like to think we're capable of actually having more polling places.
Well, I would think we are, but I don't know if we... Whatever. I mean, it's been a...
Or we're capable of opening fast food joints, so...
Well, there's a profit motive there. So hey, we've chased the new, what is it, the new stomach bug to Taco Bell. lettuce.
Gee, that's stunning.
Yeah. Well, he goes, I think it's Taco Bell, but one of their suppliers, evidently that's the thing yesterday. Last time it was raspberries. I don't know how raspberries get contaminated, but anyway, I guess they do.
Well, sometimes there's a lot of ways it could do it. So it could be the grower. It could be something with the grower, certainly. But you know, these things make a lot of stops along the way. Much of it, in fact, most of it has to be maintained at temperature. So you know, if in the process of shipping, if shipping container loses its refrigeration, and somebody is dishonest along the way and says, oh hell, we'll just fix it and turn it back on, and so what if it spent the last day and a half without the temperature controls, that can happen. And so you could see that, but there's also, you could get a contamination in a distribution warehouse, you know, that is completely unrelated to the grower per se, but could be a contamination that is then you know, passed on through anything that goes out of that that particular distribution center.
The what was Kennedy's quote when they had the cranberry big issue when he and Nixon were running for office? And it was evidently, it was before, actually it was one of the reasons why they started putting barcodes on produce, because there was a problem with cranberries, but the cranberries that they had a problem with were from Washington and not from Wisconsin. So somehow or another, Kennedy was in Wisconsin and he takes a big glass of cranberry juice, and then I guess Nixon had done the same thing, and Kennedy said something to the effect, well, if I go down, at least you'll have the satisfaction as I took the vice president with me, or something along those lines. But neither one of them went down. Evidently, that's when the first kind of barcodes came in, Kevin. The first barcodes, I think, were on railroad cars. But then they started, it's gone a long way between then and the supply chain stuff that you talk about. But it really kind of started, you know, a long, long time ago. And you guys are always really good at explaining to everybody that all the stuff that goes on in the computers is just one. I mean, there's been breakthroughs along the way, but by and large, it's been a continual improvement for, you know, 60 years, right, or 70.
Well, it's as the you know, the ideas, the abilities. I mean, heck, I remember you know, relational databases running on a mainframe in that was you know, for my hands-on, it was in the 80s, the early half of the 1980s. But was that really practical? Running on a mainframe, you'd do a query against the database, and it would take 10 minutes to answer. You know, you come back now, and we do that kind of stuff on personal computers in a matter of seconds, and we have all kinds of different database technologies available as well. And you know, Carl's talked about how quickly he can run stuff, but you know, it's because we have more processing power, and it's cheap. It's cheap and affordable. It's more, and it's affordable. We have more memory is cheap, and it's affordable. Even by today's, you know, by recent standards, historically speaking, memory is still plentiful and cheap. And bandwidth and the ability to transfer data back and forth, and all of those factors. And each one takes its step forward, and as it does, something that we know we can do conceptually becomes more feasible. And you know, that's the growth of technology. That's the way it works, and that's the way it works in a lot of areas besides just computing.
Did you hear the story today about the teleprompter guy from the White House? It's getting nailed for betting on all those things before the president's speeches, even the State of the Union.
Yep.
The part I found,
I heard the report. I didn't get any details, so I don't know any of the details.
Well, the two details I want to.
But yeah, it's just like getting insider information.
Yeah, well, yeah. But the two details. One is kind of funny, and one is just something that people should know, and maybe if they don't already know. Evidently, he was aware that Trump likes to wander off the script.
No shit.
Yeah. So he had evidently he had the betting thing open during the speech. The minute he went off the speech, he would cancel his bet, or if he was up a little money because of the ad change,
yeah.
he would cancel his bet. I'm thinking, that's special. But the thing that I think most people are probably aware of this, but when you have exchanges, for lack of a better term, like a stock exchange, an option exchange, you know, Board of Trade, whatever it is, and people cheat. The idea is that you know, when you make, if somebody calls me up or my brother up today and says, hey, buy me 1,000 IBM, we go and we get the trade done for you, okay, on an exchange. But you buy it from another person who's selling it to you. That's why anytime everybody buys a stock or sells a stock, they always think they've got the upper hand, right? Well, every time you buy 1,000 shares, somebody sold it to you. I mean, if you're a trader like I, you know, was for 20-some years for myself and now for clients, I'm not all that sure that I'm the smart one today. The other guy, it might be his day, but most people have an ego that, no, if I'm buying it, it's because I talked to Joe and I talked to this newsletter guy, and by the way, it's going straight up. Well, that's fine. The fact is, somebody did sell it to you, right? And, you know, he might actually, his newsletter writer might be better. But that, having said that, the weird part is if you find a guy, say, like you know, Carl at Goldman Sachs runs in, and when I pick Goldman Sachs and Carl, I don't know, and all of a sudden they come in and they got all this inside information and they buy it from you. Now, if it's the wrong person, now, of course, if it is Goldman Sachs, nothing's going to happen to him probably, but if it's the wrong person, they're going to come after him for insider trading, right? And, you know, they're going to go in front of the SEC or God knows who, and they'll probably settle. It probably won't go to court, okay? One of the problems of going to court is there actually is no congressionally defined insider trading definition, but there's been a lot of case law, so forth, in the SEC, the NASD, and those kinds of things. But the bottom line is they may settle with the SEC or somebody for $2 million. They get the dough. Nobody... It's got to be, I'm not saying it never happened, but they're never going to find you who was on the other side of the trade and say, you get the $1 million. They don't give a crap about you. Plus, you know, it's hard to tell whether you might have sold it to them and bought an option at the same time. It's hard to sometimes find out what the damages really are with the people on the other side. But you know they are. I mean, those are the people essentially that got screwed. But at the end of the day, if somebody gets fined, the government gets the dough. Which, you know, I think some people...
Well, you're making one of the great arguments against smaller government, because government doesn't give a crap about you. Government has no empathy. And as a result, you know, when we have more government, all you have is someone who's more intrusive in your life who just doesn't care about you.
Well, I don't disagree. But I'm saying, but if it was maybe Goldman Sachs who got screwed, they might get some of the dough. You aren't, or I'm not. I mean, it's again, I mean, you know, who you are, who the law works for, right? But nobody's going to take it upon themselves and go find the other side of the trade. I mean, there was a trade, I forget the name of the firm. Everybody, John Nigerian was the specialist or DPM in one of these stacks. It was what hell was it? Was it Micron? Might have been Micron. Anyway, one of the biggest owners of the stack was a Simplot, the guy who owned does all the potatoes up in Idaho for McDonald's. He's like the biggest potato producer in the world or in the country or something. Somehow or another, he had a whole bunch of the stock. I'm thinking Micron, but I could be wrong. And the stock's going down, 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 and he's got a margin issue as big as he was. This is, you know, that's 20 years ago. I forget what firm it was, Kevin. It was Morgan Stanley, one of those guys. They said, okay, we'll take you out of the trade. It was like $8. John tells the story better than me because he was right there. They said, we'll take you out of all your stuff at like $8 or $8.50 or some low number. So the guy goes, okay. the minute they got the stock, they came out with a huge recommendation on it. They sold it like 2 hours later for 10 or 11. Now, you know, what's your fallback?
We'll take you out, sure.
Yeah, we'll take you out at a price.
We're nice guys.
You know, we probably already have the 10 bid in our other pocket. By the way, we'll take it at 9. Okay, then. It's a great world, isn't it? What do you suppose is shaking up the tree over in... let me see what the interest rates are here this morning. They've been creeping back up really more than since before the CPI and those other ones were down. Today they're actually down a little bit. We're still over 4.5 in the 10-year, 4.52, but they have been creeping up to where you're 30-year is over 5 by kind of a ways. It's 5.1. What do you suppose is shaking the guys up over east? I mean, there's a couple of YouTube videos that I haven't seen yet, but this one lady does some stuff. She's all over she's got he's got kind of a canary in the coal mine view of what's happening with Japan regarding the oil situation and their general issue. They've been putting money in the system over there, so they've got they had their market back at like all time records. It's not after today, but they have a problem they're over 162 in the yen. Now that means 162 to the dollar. So you need 162 yen to equal $1. It's a flip side of how the other ones are quoted. And they're saying they don't want it below 160. Because now when they go out to get oil, they have to take the yen, turn it into dollars, and then go buy the oil. So the oil goes up, and their currency goes down. They're basically getting stuck in both ends. And so what they've been doing, according to this lady, is they've been selling, I think they've been selling some gold, because gold is going down, but they've been selling U.S. assets. And they have stuff here, but basically the government, I think, has U.S. bonds, and I think they're still well over $900 billion in U.S. stuff. Now, that's not really a good sign. Now, if they drop $10 or $20 billion and do some currency transactions in the next 3 weeks, I don't think it's going to make a big problem in the world. But if it starts to be ongoing, given our deficit stuff, this all could kind of come together. Just something to watch. I mean, nothing you can't trade off it. You can't say, oh my God, the yen is 162. I'm gonna sell everything. Although if you did that yesterday at 2 o'clock, you might be all right. But I don't know if I'd be a seller here because of that. I mean, it's pretty difficult, Kevin. I mean, your stuff is high. You think there's room for it to go down? You saw what happened to IBM last week, and it hasn't bounced back at all. And then you see a down day, and you say, well, God, this stuff's cheap enough. Every time it gets down here, there's been a buyer before. Is there a buyer this time? And if there isn't, what's the liability? And we talked the other day about margin loans went up $80 billion in April and $110 in May. Well, that's a hell of a lot. Now, is that because people are hurting? And I think I explained yesterday that once you, if... I'll have to be real quick on it again, Kevin. when you buy a stock, you call us up, you buy a stock. You buy 1,000 shares, and it costs you $100,000. You've got to send us a check for 50, okay? The other $50,000 loan, as long as it's a stock that's marginable, which most of them are, we, our clearing firm, get you the loan. Now, different than before 29, if the stock goes down $2 today, and now your equity is only 98, you don't have to come up with the $2,000. You do in the futures markets, but you don't in the equity markets because there's a sliding scale. You don't get a margin call till your equity is only 30% of the stock. Now, once it gets there, it does become dollar for dollar. So there's reasons why the market's only down a little bit. But if it started to really crap out and you start to get to that level where there's margin calls, like any down day then, in some stocks or in some people's accounts, become another margin call day. So once you get to the 30%, it is dollar for dollar, which is, you don't ever want to get there. That's when it gets scary. Did I explain that well enough or not?
Yeah.
And because it does, the futures side are dollar for dollar all the time. So if you buy, a corn contract, which is 5,000 bushels, and whatever you have to put up, I don't know what the corn margin is, but say you put up 10%, you put up $1,000, say. Okay, well, if the corn's down $500 today, you got to bring in $500 tomorrow. So there's no slide there. So whenever we have people that do futures, we used to do, half our business used to be futures. Why do you suppose that is, Kevin? Why do you suppose nobody trades, even in the Midwest now? We have farmer clients that, they trade because it's their business. We used to have a lot of people that traded corn and soybeans just in the Chicago area and traded... Well, not so much gas or oil futures are too big, but we had currency futures. Now nobody has any interest in that stuff. Why do you suppose that is?
I have no idea.
I can tell you why it is.
Okay, fire up.
Because what you saw last night has now become codified, the thing out of Trump Media, that they're setting up an API and they're going to sell access to it so that people can have the information 1 millisecond before anybody else if they pay them. And in the futures market, as you know, Chief, for everyone that buys something, it's unlike a stock in that you don't give up opportunity cost. If I sell you my IBM and then the stock goes up, I didn't actually lose any money. I lost opportunity cost. Okay, you made money because the stock went up, but my quote unquote loss is that I gave up the opportunity to make that money. Okay, I didn't actually lose money. The futures market, it is, as you are well aware, that's not how it works. For everyone that makes $10, someone loses $10. Well, if I have the information 10 milliseconds before you do, then you're going to lose basically every time.
Well,
here's the thing though, Chief. This started with the spoofing nonsense, which I was all over when it really got ridiculous in the 2007-2008 time frame. I've told this story before. The CMA got all pissed off at me that I actually put up a YouTube video over July 4th holiday rather than calling them. And I said, you guys are the ones that are supposed to be supervising this crap. If you're not watching, that's on you. It's not on me. Okay? And the intent of these people was to place bids and orders they did not actually intend to fill. Now, that's a violation of the exchange rules. It's also a violation of the Exchange Act.
Okay. Yeah, we don't worry about stuff like that.
No, we don't worry about laws. There's the law. Well, you know, gee, if I make $1 million, I don't give a shit about that. Okay. But now you actually are over time, you know, for a while you had people that were putting up microwave transmitters between Aurora and Chicago. And the reason is the propagation delay through the air is a few tenths or hundreds of a microsecond less than it is down a fiber cable. Okay, the speed of light is commonly thought of as a fixed value. It's actually a ceiling rather than a floor. Okay, so there is both switching delay and a propagation delay for a laser going through a piece of glass, which doesn't exist because the glass isn't there on a microwave transmission. Therefore, the microwave, and on top of that, the microwave transmission is straight, whereas a piece of fiber goes around the corner, goes down the railroad right away, or you know, whatever have you, right? So in terms of distance, it's slightly longer. And you had an arms race in the 2008-ish time frame of firms that were putting these private links in, because that couple of microseconds meant that they could beat you. They could trade in front of what they saw. You had no way as a retail trader or any other entity than those guys to beat them. It was
without going into a long story about where that all works and who sold it and who the immoral bastards were that started it. You don't know how right you are.
Well, I'm just saying. I used to trade futures. The
exchange started selling quicker access than the people on their own trading floor.
I know, Chief. But
can you think of anything other than people should have got a rope out for? I never say stuff like that. I mean,
well, hello. But I stopped doing it because I kept getting run over.
Well, this thing that Trump's guys are pulling out, the idea for that guy to lob out tradable information that he trades on, now he's going to sell other people access to it faster than other people? That is so immoral, I can't go there.
Well, Chief, he's trying to... this is their way to so-called regularize or legalize or whatever you want to call it, what is under existing law. Of course, nobody cares, and nobody has cared for 15 years, okay? No one went to jail for doing any of this stuff, except one guy that they busted who was actually a British national that they really did arrest and haul in and change on the spoofing stuff.
Oh, there's been people. Every one of them, almost every one of them has been overseas. A couple guys from Hong Kong, too.
They actually hauled this guy in and threw him in jail, and I was asked to show up and explain to FBI, DOJ kind of people exactly how this worked. And I did, but I don't trade these instruments anymore. I refuse to engage because you cannot win. Why would I play poker against someone who can see the cards in my hand?
Let me give a real simple example for anybody listening and bring Kevin up to speed. One of them, I haven't seen the guy in ever. I think he became a cook, of all things. Guy named, I think his name was Mark Jansen. He was used to trade the trading floor forever, and he was, you know, they have a lot of dough behind him, but he's a pretty good market maker, made a living, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's a DPM, and they get rid of the floor and all this crap. So he gets an office right across the street from us here. And some guy backs him with a few bucks, and he starts putting markets onto the screen and three or four stocks, and he's 20 up on, you know, 10 different option things, or maybe 20. And I said, well, after 3 or 4 months, he's learning. And I go, Mark, how's it going? He goes, you know, I'm actually starting to make a few bucks. He goes, it's not great, but I'm making a couple bucks. He goes, I'm doing 70% of my trade with retail, which means that you're trading with a client. In other words, if if the big schmo market maker is, 30-cent bid at 50, and you make a market, you say, I'll be 35-cent bid, and somebody comes in to hit that bid, somebody from PTI or someplace else, we're going to try and get 35 cents for our client, not 30.
Right.
So there's the more you trade with a customer, the more you're bettering somebody else's bid or offer. And that's a mark of you doing, you know, a good job. So all of a sudden, about 2 months later, I get this call. Hey, Chief, you got to meet me downstairs for a drink. And I go, okay. He's got like 3 drinks in him already, and he goes, I'm out of business. And I go, what do you mean you're out of business? He said, all of a sudden today, every time I was 30-cent bid, I got taken, and then it was 40-cent bid. And I traded 95% of my trades today were with another market maker. So whoever I'm going against just got a feed like twice as fast as mine. And I'm toast. Okay, then. So this has been preferencing all along, but the fact that a president would do that,
This essentially what this announcement out of Trump's son's Trump's media company, run by his son, so it's not actually him. Pull the other one, guys. But for President Trump, his son would probably be handing out shopping carts at Walmart. The reality.
Hey, wait a minute. That's going to be my next job.
Oh well, okay. Well, then we'll let him clean up the dog crap that they.
Well, today you want to be you don't want to be gathering in the parking lot with his air, Kevin. You want to get him inside today.
No. I'm not going to get the carts. I'm just standing inside and saying welcome to Walmart. To me.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
That will be my fifth career.
Okay. We'll let him go get the carts in the smog filled air. For the fires. The thing that gets me about all of this is that, Chief, this is exactly the sort of rug pull liquidity drain that happens in markets before there are crashes and that causes them. All right, because anybody that has a brain in their head that heard that announcement or saw it somewhere in the media is going to say, now, why would I want to be trading in that environment? That doesn't mean you can't buy a mutual fund or something like that, sit down for 20 years, because that probably doesn't have any impact on you. But for people that are actually active in the market, you've just expanded the scope of this out of the futures realm, which most people that I know that used to actively trade futures don't do it anymore. And the reason is they kept getting run over as a result of this crap, myself included.
No, it's been in the derivative market, in the option market. It's been there forever.
Well, I understand that, but there's. As the scope of this kind of screwing expands,
okay. Let me take this back a little bit. When Carl was talking about trading commodities, let's pick one. The corn
or the S&P or the
okay.
S&P.
Right, okay, but let's say something simple. Your corn pit, where corn is traded in the Board of Trade, where it used to be traded, now it's electronic. But there were people there. It was a primary market. There was no derivative market. It was a primary market. If somebody came in to buy a bunch of corn and people sold it to them, you know, if it was Kellogg's or somebody or other, people there sold it to them. And somewhere along the line, maybe a farmer or somebody else could be a buyer. I mean, depending. But the point being, it happened right there. There was no place to go. That was the primary market. Now, next to it was the option market, okay, the corn option market. So if somebody came into the corn option market to buy options, the second after you heard the big roar go up in the primary crowd, you knew, careful with this one, right? I mean, but now it's all separated. So how quickly the information gets from somebody who's going into the wherever the ether is that Korn trades now into the crowd, how quickly you get that information is very, very key. Where before, everybody got it at the same time. So it was a lot more even, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but this is the sort of nonsense that's, look, what you...
Carol, it's not nonsense if you are into the new world, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. It's not nonsense at all.
Yeah, guess what? The essence of what's going to happen here is that I'm sure that this API access and the coding behind it and the location of where your equipment has to be in order to actually be first.
Do you think Todd Blanche is going to say it's illegal?
Of course he's not. But me sitting here in Tennessee, I am how many thousand miles, 1,500 miles, whatever, away from any of the exchange entry points. So no matter how fast a computer I have, no matter how fast a network link I buy, makes absolutely no difference. The speed of light means that the guy who's sitting in New York or in Chicago is going to get it before I do and be able to act on it before I do. So even if I fork up the money, I can't beat him.
But you and Kevin are not near as sneaky as you ought to be on this. Now, I told you what was going on at the CBOE, right? Well, in order for the stuff is coming out of their building. You know more about it coming out, how lines and all that kind of crap than I do. It's coming out of their building. So for them to give a line to, say, Chicago Corp down the street or somebody else like that, or bring in a line from the New York as to where the stock is actually trading, it's never going to be faster than you could do 50 feet up, right? So you almost are going to have to retard the line to one place to make the other guys faster. So you actually are going to have to purposely give the people on the trading floor that own the seats that are paying access every day, you have to purposely give them it slower than somebody else to make them faster, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty bleeped up.
Well, Chief, there were all kinds of games going on like that, and there always have been to some extent, okay? But to have a president... have his media company come out and literally create a second tier of people who basically buy their way into the front of the line and be able to front run everybody else.
It stops the people in the White House having to make the call.
Well, you know what? He can bite me, all right? I mean, I disagree with a lot of things that the other side of the aisle does, and I just, but I call balls and strikes as I see them. This one is not a ball. It's not a strike. It's an intentional beaner.
You know what the
how much you want to bet the code for this is AI generated?
Well, which
would be a recipe for disaster.
Well, you know what? Hey, Kevin, the thing is, these guys, the automated trading stuff and the link into the exchanges and stuff like this and the arbitrage that. Arbitrage is nothing new, okay? There was a period of time when I did some work for a rather large international banking concern, and their entire gambit was arbitraging a particular set of FX pairs, and the way they made money was by arbitraging the difference between, for example, London and New York, okay? In that, there's a hundredth of a cent difference in the trading pair between those two places. They identify it, stomp on it on one side and on the other at the same time. Yeah, that gap closes pretty rapidly, but if you're talking about billions of dollars worth of transactions, you can make some pretty damn good money.
Those guys did a massive service for people.
They did, and the thing is, they closed you close the gap by that, and you stabilize the two prices converge quite rapidly. And you get paid for it. But if you're wrong, you get destroyed.
You know who is actually a genius at that? And I'll say that, because a lot of these people that turn out to be bad people actually had some talent to start with. Who's the bleep that went to jail for the Bitcoin? The guy from Bermuda or Bahamas? What the hell is his name?
Yeah, I know. Bankman.
Yeah, but
not Bankman. That's the that's from Ghostbusters. Yeah. Free, something free.
Bankman Fried. Yeah. Yeah, Freed, but or whatever.
That guy, when he started out and Bitcoin was being traded, I know nothing about Bitcoin, but evidently, from what I read, he was a guy who figured out for some reason the Bitcoin was always. Now, the problem there is who's your clearing agent, right? You don't have two trades open. Somehow or another, he found a way. The Bitcoin was always, Kevin, Carol, help me here. It was always a little higher in Europe than it was in Asia. Now the question is, how could you buy it in Asia and sell it in Europe without having it clear? Otherwise, you just end up with two huge positions and hope neither side goes bust. So somehow or another, he found a way to get the stuff to clear, where he actually could clear, and he made a fortune on that. I'm going to say, somewhat legitimately, and oh, by the way, probably helped out both markets by evening out. And then all of a sudden, when he got dough, then he turned into God knows what. But his original talent was pretty singular, and I still don't know how he actually did the clearing to where he wasn't long Europe, short Asia, which I don't think you want to be in that mess. Plus, how could you possibly have enough money to carry that position of any size? I mean, if there were two separate transactions, so somehow or another. Did he create a clearing place, or somehow he got it to clear? Do you have any idea how he did it?
No, I didn't. I didn't follow it close enough. So I.
But it's no different than if gold is more expensive in London than it is in France. You know, you sell it in London and you buy it in France. That's a service, right?
Well, yeah, and that's precisely what these guys were doing, but with currency crosses. And there's nothing wrong with that.
You know, one of the biggest. You know more about. Correct me here somewhere, but it's one of the biggest, the primary use of this New York Stock Exchange data. Somebody put a big, their big office was in New Jersey. I forget which company it was, but they ended up putting some kind of huge, was it a microwave thing or something, through one of the tunnels in New York. They used that as the right of way to get it there faster than you could get it anywhere else. And one day, some mope in a truck or bus whacked into the microwave or the line. They got totally cut off because the truck ran into this big, huge, whatever it was, fiber optic line or something, because they were getting it faster in New Jersey than the people were in New York, and all of a sudden they weren't getting it at all. Oops.
Yeah, I just, it's one of these things. As technology advances, you're going to see all sorts of different things back and forth, right? And some of it's good, some of it's bad. But when you have something like this that happens, I don't see how anybody can look at that and say that's good.
No,
it's totally
immoral. You're coming up with information that you know is market moving in the first place. So
well, you're creating it.
You're creating it. So the idea is, if you wanted to be square about it, you would have a fax machine loaded up with 50 news people or whatever. However you used. Or you do something, or you'd have a specific time at 10 o'clock, you're going to rattle something off and everybody can listen. If you wanted to do this, you can do it.
Well, this is the entire reason that when you have the journalists that cover, for example, the Fed news releases or the BLS data or whatever, they're sitting in a blacked out room with no electronics, right? They have the report in their hand 15 minutes in advance. They have to have it in their hand 15 minutes in advance because they have to write the story. It's like, you and I, I'm on your show on Jobs Friday.
Yeah.
Right? And then when I get done with that, having seen the report come out, then I write the article that I post on my blog. Well, if I'm going to actually post that article at the time that the release comes out at 8:30, I have to have the actual data in my hands some number of minutes in front of that, but to give someone access to that before anybody else, that's obscene. And actually let them use it. It in a room where we're all there, we all get to write our articles and our stories, but we can't, the blockade is up. You're in essentially a Faraday cage. You have no electronic devices, and you can't go take a piss for that 30 minutes.
Well, yeah, okay? but follow the immorality. The immorality is we're going to trade on this information until finally now everybody's figured it out with 3,500 trades in the first quarter that's what people are doing.
Well, not only that, but you look at the oil futures.
Yeah.
That's an hour before he posts up something.
If you're sleazy, the next thing you do is say, look, how about we just sell this information early to other people, and we don't trade it. We just get paid no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
now even if we're wrong, we make money, right?
We have a in our office. I mean, we've got as fast as feet as we can get, but we're not. I think it's hard for me to even say it, but a lot of stuff we do for our clients, we nitpick at every single one of these orders. Nobody else does that. I mean, that's what we do.
No, I know. Yeah.
So I mean, it's constantly a spread order. It's constantly, if it's 40 bid at 60, we're gonna try and buy it at 50 or something. We're constantly messing with these guys, so they don't want our 20 or 30 or 50 lot up there. They're probably gonna trade with us. They can go back to their wider market. But it's very obvious to everybody here, if you just put in an order, say the market's 4 bid at 420, and you go, okay, well, let's just put one in there. We'll offer it at 480. So you got a standing order. All of a sudden, it's 430, 440. Not all of a sudden. It could go the other way. 430, 440, 450. The minute you actually get taken on a standing order, somebody's been, I'll use the term, leaning on that. And virtually every time, it's immediately 485 bid. So there's no question that somebody has made a trade somewhere else already before they take your stuff. Before you see the stock or the future or whatever it is trade up, your order is already taken because somebody else already knows it happened. So they're only taking your order because IBM already traded here and they already sold the other side, so now they want to buy your option. It's as crooked as it gets. But our skill set is, okay, everybody else is getting nicked for 30 cents. Our people are only getting nicked by a nickel, and once in a while we win on a spread or something. Because you can't screw with you that much on a spread.
Right.
Because you're buying one and selling the other. So it's more of a... But even then, when you get filled, say it's a $5 spread and you're, $1.50 bid. When you get filled, a lot of times your feeling is, all right, the stock dropped 50 cents. I guess I still like it. I don't like it as much as I did 50 cents ago, right? There's always... When you get filled, it's always a spot where do you really want it there or not? But if it's a good enough trade in your mind and the spread is a good enough price, you roll with it. But I'm under no illusions that who's ever trading with me has a faster feed than I do. How could you not if that's your business?
Well, it's just, this was just, when I saw this, for the most part, I'm kind of meh about a lot of the stuff that people bitch about with regards to Trump and the shenanigans.
Well, but this has been going on in other guys' administrations too. I mean, it's not
I understand. Yeah. It's not just him, all right. And that's the thing is, everybody wants to scream. Everyone screams about it if you're on one side or the other, right? Okay, fine.
But it's finally gotten so blatant. Goldman Sachs, these guys have been doing it forever.
Yeah, this is so in your face though that it's this one's off the rack. So.
Well, it's
you guys are such trading nerds, though. I mean,
I'm sitting here
listening, and you guys are reveling in the minutia of it, which is fine.
Also comes down to Kevin and how does somebody get a signal faster than somebody else? The other way, you only got the signals. You had ears.
I get the overall point, but you guys like getting into the mechanics of it, which is total nerd material. That's okay. It got to it.
Well, but the
be proud of it.
But one of the messages. Really is. I don't think you can go back to open outcry, bringing in orders by hand, and so forth.
No.
But the fact is, having all the trades take place in one spot, whether it's electronic or not, I think is the way to go. I mean, I'd like to see all IBM traded in one spot, not people shopping orders somewhere else and trying to blow through an offer.
Oh, you mean like the eight different places that show up now, as far as what exchange it's on?
Yeah, but you're forgetting the black pools. There's more like 17.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess where I'm going with Kevin, and generally, is do I think that the corn option pit has to be a bunch of guys standing there screaming and yelling? I don't, but it could be inclusive, in which case all of it's done in one spot. Now, corn probably still is, but now if you take your stock and your option trades and you spread them all over the place, All you have to do is say, okay, well, we're gonna trade stock. We're not gonna charge you for commission, right? No, okay. So, but you're gonna get paid by somebody, and who are you getting paid by? Well, if it's not your client, you're no longer working for them. Really, you're working for the person you sell that order to. Now, to a client, most people say, "Hey, it's free. I'm a winner on this." No, you're not, because you know, on a regular old trade, if I'm gonna buy 100 shares of Exxon for my nephew who's a day old and he's gonna sell it when he's 90. It doesn't matter. Free's free, I guess. But right. But the point being is they now sell that order flow. And we have problems with that all the time on our stuff. Our clearing firms want to sell our option stuff. And we fight like hell to make sure that we can go wherever we want. And we move from exchange to exchange. But if you give them their own license, they're going to go to the exchange that pays them the most. And you're going to get to fill the least. So it's not like it's not there if you want to look at it.
Well, and the thing is that, like I said, the guy who buys an index, you buy an ETF or a mutual fund or whatever, and you sit on it for 40 years, the impact on you is probably small enough that you wouldn't be able to actually find it.
No,
it cost you $5 over the space of 40 years. Yeah, so what? But if you're actually attempting to trade, it's a whole different game, because that there the transaction cost and slippage is part of it, which is what you're talking about, is what gets into there. Right now, all of a sudden, that's the difference between making money and losing money.
Well, if you are if you have a really high end system, which we don't, because we don't take the payment, okay, if right. you have a real high end system, Kevin, you'll love this. If you kick the system up and say I'll kick a stack here, Coke, KO, trade 8502. Well, if I wanted to buy the 86 calls for myself or a client, if I wanted to, I can get a system that shows all the exchanges and shows how much I get paid to take the offer at that exchange.
Yeah.
That is bonker bullshit. But I have a buddy of mine, well, he's an acquaintance. He backs like 20 traders that actually are retail traders that trade, all day long. They trade 5-6 stocks and they put out. But they're very mindful of where they go. And he says if the person can break even over the course of a year and trade, 500 to 1,000 contracts a day, they make a huge living just on the money they're getting from the exchanges.
Right.
Which is insane.
that's nuts. Yeah, but that's what the world's evolved into.
It kind of rolls from every area. I want to talk about a comment. We're always banging on the federal government. So the guys, we've ad nauseum. I've talked about this area in the South Loop, where they're building the soccer stadium, as being totally unimproved because it was landfill from 1920 something. They moved the river and filled the damn thing in. There's nothing there. No streets, no gas. So now the city is having this huge fight in the city council over $90 million shortfall in the budget and how that equals 2,000 jobs. 2 days ago, they just approved a $447 million infrastructure program for this area so this guy can put up the soccer stadium with his own money, and he's going to tell everybody else that he paid for it. So What do you think the slippage is on that $447 million contract? It's probably more than the 90 they're short. The more you listen to this stuff, it's not one place. It's all over the place. Don't we have anybody that has any common sense anywhere anymore?
No. That would be a no.
But how do you? It's really hard to criticize one person or one group when it seems like it's almost endemic, for God's sake. It's all over the place.
Right.
Or are we just getting old and grumpy and we were taught how to add at an early age and we still think people should be able to do that?
I think both are true. I think we are getting old and grumpy, but but that's not the reason for the observation.
But, Kevin, you are, you and Russell, I haven't met any...
Besides, I'm young.
Well, yeah.
Compared to you.
Well, that's true, yeah. By the way, I was talking to one of our buddies, not saying he's a contributor to the show or not. He was talking about age limits in Congress, and he labs out an age, and I go, well, that's like 4 years older than you.
Yeah.
And I go, and guess what, 4 years from now you're going to lob an age limit out there that's 4 years older than that. That's just the way people are, right? I mean, whatever. But
and you know, as you raise that, I don't care about the age. I think, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, I care about tenure in Congress. I remain, and I know I don't want to open this can of worms right now, but I do remain a fan of term limits. But and that, you know, that doesn't have to be, you know, 6 years, or it could be longer. But at some point, people need to go away. Anyway, the age issue isn't germane. I think it's just the ability issue, and the fact that we have people who, you know, hang in office when they're just not capable of doing the work anymore, and everybody knows it, and yet we do it anyway. And you know, forget Joe Biden, which I'd like to, but you know, forget him and just go to Dianne Feinstein or where McConnell is now. You know, that Dianne Feinstein had her staff members handling everything for her, and they just, you know, kind of whisper in her ear and tell her how to vote on things.
Kevin, do you think? By the way, I've never really had a.
And by the way, that's just a really good way to to allow that. Is there a good way to crap on somebody's, you know, distinguished career?
Well, I guess I'm going to, while we have Carl, I'm going to ask this question. Is there some way that the way Congress is now being run that makes what you just said even worse? I mean, we're losing Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin is retiring. He's up there. Been there a long time. Now, the difference between him and whoever gets elected in terms of power in Congress, in terms of seniority and so forth. I mean, I get it. When you get there, you learn some stuff. You know, you should move up the chain in committees a little bit. My opinion, and I'm asking this from you guys, I think that that's way too extreme. That, you know, one of the reasons why, I don't know the man, but I think if I had him on the show, and maybe, who knows, maybe we'll try and find him. If I had Durbin and I said, you know, why did you run for the last term? I bet the answer, if he was totally truthful, is that I've accumulated so much seniority and on these committees that I can actually do something for the state of Illinois, or think I can, where a freshman, the trade-off is like night and day. I mean, the difference between, I mean nobody likes Pelosi, I mean, I was never a fan, but the difference in her power versus somebody 27 years old or whatever that's going to get elected in her spot, I think that difference is way too extreme. The seniority part is way, you can't give that up because it took you 30 years to get it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, am I making any sense at all?
Well, yeah, you are, and you know, maybe part of the problem is that people don't need to be around that long to accumulate that kind of power, because I don't know that vesting that kind of power into one individual is healthy.
Well, I'm just saying, Carl, you, the reason why I wanted to ask about you were here, you helped elect a buddy, and he shows up, he was useless as tits on a bull his first year, wasn't he? Did he even get a committee?
Well, yeah, but that was largely because once they realized that his intention was to try to go after some of the corruption by doing things that were beneficial to his constituents. Duh, that's what we're supposed to do, right?
But I mean, but even if he even
then,
if he wasn't,
all of a sudden, well, but he was, okay. So you have two basic problems. You have 435 members of Congress, okay, and that's been set statutorily. That's not a constitutional limitation, by the way. When the country was young, your representation was of a reasonably modest number of people in the House. Okay.
When did it get to 435?
I'd have to look at when that actually was.
It's been a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, that's the entire point. okay, is that that's when that happened. Let's see, 1911. So it was made permanent in 1929. Okay, so there's.
That was a good year.
Well, yeah, isn't that interesting, right? Yeah.
Exciting times, yes.
Yeah, so I mean that was the, but again, that could be changed by a law because that's what it was done. It was an act that was passed by Congress. Okay. So if you take a look at you know, what was the population of the U.S.
Can I intercede? So in 1959, when we landed two new states in,
right?
Somebody else had to drop a couple because Hawaii and Alaska picked up a couple.
So there was a temporary period where it was actually 437.
Okay.
So during right after that, those two admissions, that was 1959 and 1963.
Okay.
And then it went back because the permanent appropriation was there. Yeah, so because we added Alaska and Hawaii as states, okay? But here's the interesting thing. In 1911, the population in the United States was about 90 million, roughly. I mean, I think that the actual census was, you know, like 93 or something like that. So the population of the country has essentially tripled, which means that the number of people that a representative represents has roughly tripled. All right.
Well, we don't want 1,200.
Why don't we?
Because we end up like the one in, isn't that the European Union has like 900 in there? What do they ever do?
Wait a minute. The logic behind this is that, well, you know, that would be very difficult to do with, you know, voting. No, it's not. Not in the modern world. It absolutely is not difficult. And here's the thing. The greater the number of the whole, the harder it is to bribe them all. All right? It becomes exponentially more difficult.
I think that you're going to find these drug companies can do it.
Well, guess what? It becomes exponentially more expensive. And by the way, coalitions of people who don't like what you're doing are more easily formed that can derail what you're up to. So the other thing that we did, and I have said that this is when the book is written on the United States, that is going to be the one that kills it, which is the 17th Amendment, because and this is why the Senate is irretrievably corrupted. There's nothing you can do about it without getting rid of the 17th Amendment.
All right, tell everybody what the 17th Amendment is.
Okay, the 17th Amendment is popular election of senators, okay? Prior to that, each state chose how senators were to be put into place, and the state legislatures reserved the right of recall. So if the Senate, and the whole point of a bicameral legislature is to vest the power in different places between the two parts of the legislature. So the power vests in the people's direct election within the House. But in the original design of our government by the founders, the power in the Senate vested in the state legislatures, in that the state legislatures could void the seating of their senators and recall them. They had the power to do this. The 17th Amendment got rid of that. So what this prohibited is the federal government shoving mandates down the state's throats without their consent, because you couldn't do it. If you tried it, the state would turn around and yank the senators out, okay? So because the legislature could meet and vote them out of office, because they were the ones that were responsible. So that is where, and if you look at where the concentration of power and the corruption at the federal level, where it really took off, it was at the time, it was right
well,
after
I think
that
it's,
happened.
I think it, I'm, you know, it has to do with, you know, I understand from being on a board, okay, I was on it for 6 years, I accomplished exponentially more in my second 3 years, because I knew the lay of the land, and probably in those 3 years, I probably did most of it in the last year. So there is a learning curve.
Sure.
I mean, so I guess I'm trying to find it. You know, maybe You know, Kevin can almost put this on a computer, but there's a learning curve. I talked to a guy when the CBOE used to have the things out in Washington on Capitol Hill when you could just, like, walk into Congress. Now you can't, but...
Well, before 9/11, you could.
Yeah, so I'm out there.
I was out there before.
And I'm talking to this guy from Reading, Pennsylvania, of all places. And a big, redheaded guy, bigger than me when I was 6'4". He's like 6'5", 6'6", big, huge shoulders. He was the sheriff, somehow, in Reading. And he's a Democrat. And it's a very blue spot. But somehow or another, there was this big robbery or something happened. And his department, I guess he was really good at what he did. He's a young guy. He's 30-something. They made this arrest, like, instantly. And the guy became, like, the toast of the town, right?
Yeah.
And the Republican guy from, the guy was terrific. And this is back before you had to hate the other side. He goes, this Republican guy, he goes, we were friends. He decides to not run. Or he was old and retired or something. And the guy says, why don't you run? Even you're a Democrat. You're a good guy. So he runs and he wins. And then he tells me, you know, if he didn't ask his staff, you get like 7 people on your staff, and this is, you know, 1997 or something.
Right.
He goes, 5 of them stayed. He goes, if those people didn't stay, I wouldn't know where the men's room was, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he goes,
it is an incredible learning curve, and they stuck me on the 2 dummy committees, which were agriculture and military, not the double secret, you know, military covert operations thing where you're supposed to have some seniority. You just on a regular appropriations committee, right? So that's the year, he goes, there was a huge floods in the Midwest where St. Louis was like totally underwater. He goes, all of a sudden, I'm on that committee, and that's the hotbed committee. And then on the other side, the armed services was when they were doing the don't ask, don't tell policy.
Right.
He goes, I wish I was from Chicago. Nobody cares how you vote there. On the Reading paper, everything I do is front page. And he goes, the whole town is anti-gay. He goes, I don't care if there's gays in the military. it was so bizarre. And he said, as a matter of fact, was it Dan Rostenkowski? He was whatever said to him, vote for it to come to the floor, but then vote against it, because I know you're if you vote, you know, against the don't ask, don't tell, your people are going to fry you. He goes, I don't need that vote.
Right.
But he goes,
that's part of the whipping process.
Yeah.
Who can you lose? Right.
But I mean, my point was, this guy, real bright, real nice guy, looked like, you know, looked like he was a South Side cop, for God's sake. So I immediately liked the guy. And I think it would take him a term or two to get his feet under, you know, start doing some stuff. But I don't think it would be 10, you know, where he'd have to, you know, after 20 years, he's finally got this committee chairmanship that he can't give up, even though he can't even walk anymore or something. But the spread there is just too big, I think.
Well, the real problem, Chief, is that when you have the senatorial system that we have today, right? I mean, whether you like it or not, money runs politics. Okay, I mean, we've got all the primaries here because our governor's term limited out, and so, you know, good God, and Marcia is absolutely short of her falling over dead from a heart attack because she took one too many clot shots. There's basically no way to beat her, okay, in Tennessee. Now, do I happen to like her as a person? I think she should be governor. No. Do I like any of the other clowns that on the Republican side that are allegedly contending? No, I like them worse or less. Lesser. Why? Because no one serious is crazy enough to blow the time and the money against, they know they're going to lose.
Okay? Well, yeah.
I mean, why would you go take a swing at a ball that you know you can't hit, right? I mean, that's nuts. So, now,
unfortunately, it's a golf ball, but okay.
Well, yeah, that too. Okay. Yeah, by the way, all I got is a 1-iron, right? the thing that just is so ridiculously corrupting, though, is that the 17th Amendment was passed during a surge of populism that brought in a whole bunch of other stuff. Okay, it was part of a, I mean, as the timing suggests, right? It came with a bunch of other things. It was a serious error on the part.
I don't necessarily go down that road, but I don't. Well, I mean, it all comes down to, I think there's some issues
but it's the one amendment we can. There is no way to repeal other than by violence.
Well,
because
you
the
think
Senate
it's that big,
never,
you think it's that big of a deal. I don't.
No, I do. And but it's it, it. You can never get. Listen, anything that can never be removed except with by literal violence, by literal revolution.
I don't like the idea.
Has problems.
My flaw in what you're saying is, you could have a blue or a red state that's true blue or true red, which, you know, disgusts me to start with, but that all of a sudden you could have, in a Democratic state, you could have somebody running for Senate as a Republican who actually is pretty damn good, and he could win. He's never going to get appointed by the Democratic governor. That would suck.
No. The 17th Amendment did not prohibit a state from directly electing senators. It left it to their option how they did it, and whether or not and the legislature had the right of recall. The problem with the current system is that once you allow that mechanism to be overridden by whatever populist things go on, the monetary corruption comes into the game, and there's only two people that have to be corrupted instead of however many you have by apportionment in the House.
Well,
so now I've only got to go after two of them, and that's a problem.
But you're leading me into it's not my contention. Kevin and I have talked about this shit how many times. I think there's a couple of major flaws in the Constitution right now only because of time. There's no way the three of us could be the most corrupt people on earth. But if we're running for office in 1790 at age 45, no way we're going to get there and be able to corrupt 400, how many other people there were, 300 some people by the time we croak, right? And
right.
And oh, by the way, as fast as Kevin used to be, no way he's getting on his horse.
Which was never.
Yeah, he's getting on his horse in Indiana and running down to South Carolina to get himself involved in an election and throw money at somebody. You can have, I'll use the term buffoons, that will say that the founding fathers somehow thought all this through. How could they? You know, it's like me, you know. Well, I did watch Star Trek. It's like me thinking through warp speed. I mean, I don't even know what it is. How can I think through it? I mean, I think it was impossible. What was the when Jefferson had to go back to Washington? I remember reading this someplace. I don't know where I read this crap. That it took him, and he didn't live that far outside of Washington or Philadelphia, where the hell he was. It took him like 6 days to get back to Washington. He was only like 100 miles away. So the idea that you could corrupt money-wise or otherwise, an election in another state couldn't possibly have been anybody's ego.
Well, Chief,
now you have a Supreme Court saying, oh, yeah, any corporation can spend money where really damn well please. Well, screw, I think that's absurd. I mean,
well, yes, but here's the other thing. This was also part of the situation with that, is that the people with the technology of the time, right? You had extreme travel times, but out of that came a lot of other doctrines that don't, you know, like, for example, even though we were sort of in the modern era at the time, the war powers stuff. You know, that the president can act without having to have a declaration of war, act of Congress, essentially it came out of the construct of hot pursuit that Congress may not be in session when the bad thing happens, right? It takes time to get there. Well, guess what? In the modern world, takes time to get there is a 24-hour process, right?
Take time to get there is a logging in process.
But
not if you have to vote in person. Okay.
I'm
just saying, if you have to, for those who say, well, you know, just allow this electronically. Look, they did that during COVID, and it has been wildly abused. We do not actually know, especially with some of these geriatric people in both the House and Senate, who actually cast the votes.
Well, that's true, and if you recall, they turned over their proxies too. So,
well, that's what I'm saying.
So, so they really only had, you know, like one person that was voting for everybody.
Which you get when you
which by the way should never be allowed.
Yeah,
never.
Kevin mentioned the term limits, and by the way, I would have hoped if Kevin was alive 100 years ago, almost, if he'd had term limits put in 80 years ago, I'd be all for it. I just think the transition areas would be such a goat bleep that anyway. But I read this somebody here in Illinois, some total nerd that does nothing but figure out who gives people what money, because it's mostly your contributions are on your. There was was this before we were doing the show or just after, guys? Or there was a big call for some kind of term limits, or there was. Something. It actually caught some fire. I forget who the hell was president at the time. And this guy wrote this article talking about, or maybe it was a state where all kinds of people were retiring, the senators and the representatives or something, for whatever reason. And he talked about all of a sudden the big companies, and he named like two or three drug companies, and I don't know who else. It might have been Fannie and Freddie at the time. And how they just dropped their level down to where they started contributing to anybody who's running for state senator or state rep that they thought had some kind of future, that had a brain cell working, where they essentially just dropped the workaround, let's just go down a level, let's compromise people even sooner for less money and more of them. So the idea that, okay, we're going to wing the senator out, that somehow we've solved the problem. It may solve some problems or whatever, and I'm not against it, but I'm saying necessarily, but you did the problem you're going after, you're not getting to, because they just drop to the next person. I mean, they're pretty good at this. I mean, you think a place like APEC is going to all of a sudden, miss a beat on something like this? They're going to be ahead of the legislation. They're good at it.
That's what happened. That's how Swalwell got hooked up with the Chinese spy.
Yeah.
Is that they were they were grooming him, seeing because he was. Was it Feinstein's or was it Pelosi? I think it was Pelosi's fair-haired child and fair-haired boy, and they saw him as the up-and-comer, and so they connected him with a spy, and by connect I mean physically connected.
Now wasn't Mudd Adams? Was it Spy Who Loved Me?
No, it was a spy named Feng Feng.
Speaking of which, what exactly is Mitch McConnell's wife?
Well, now there's a problem. Actually, there's a really serious problem. And Chow, so Chow is a citizen, okay. However, of Taiwanese descent. All right. Now, there have long been questions about where loyalty lies with her. Long. And by the way, that's not his first wife. That's the second wife.
He has a couple of kids from the first wife, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, but who pursued who and under what circumstances and why? Okay? Because there's look.
I've always thought I was the one pursued.
Chief Legs is the oldest espionage game in the book.
That's why Kennedy got the PT boat thing. They couldn't get him out of Washington.
It's the oldest espionage game in the book. Okay, I mean it literally is the first one. So, there's age disparity. There's all kinds of reasons.
So you're saying that the marriage was consummated?
Well, I'm sure it was consummated.
Okay, I'm just asking,
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
I mean, the real marriage by convenience, like in the Middle Ages, I don't know if they even did it.
Well, no, I won't go that far. But if you look at...
Stocks and jocks, here we are.
Well, if you look at her history, I mean, she was born in Taiwan.
Was Wendy Graham sort of the same way?
Well, you got to wonder, right? So she was born in Taiwan. She immigrated at the age of 8 and took the oath of citizenship at 19. So she's a naturalized citizen, but she was not born in the United States. And then when you look at all the other things... and what she's done, okay, her involvement, you know, where she went and what she's done at all these in all of this time. This is a woman that you know, all the way back to 1991, George H.W. appointed her as the director of the Peace Corps. Okay, and from there on,
if you're a union person, do you like her as your Secretary of Labor for 9 years?
Good well, Lord. Yeah, good question there, right? But here's the thing: that's where she starts. And then in '93, she marries McConnell. All right, now. And supposedly set up on a blind date by a mutual friend is how it started. Yeah, okay, whatever.
So the guy didn't have to buy a drink, for God's sake?
Well, apparently he didn't have to do the usual sort of, you know, how do I get to stick this where I want to stick it, right? But the thing is that the man... All right, so her father was a shipping company executive.
That's what we should have been, shipping company,
well,
import,
you know,
export.
But there's all sorts of I think there's a problem with having somebody who is in an elected position, in anyone in their immediate family, especially their spouse, being able to be appointed to and play power broker games somewhere else within the government, even among two people who are born here as Americans.
I actually don't have a problem with them working for government. I have a problem with them on 15 different boards calling favor from the government.
Well, but the one follows the other, right? I mean, you know, the two kind of go together. You know,
anyway, we got to dash off the break and tell everybody how bad this market's doing, and we'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Yeah, I'm going to drop off, guys.
Hey, Kevin, thank you. Well, talk at you. Who do you like Sunday?
I don't know who I would predict to win, but I want to see the old man get one more.
Really?
I always like old men doing well in sports.
Well, it looks to me, you know, I'm not the idea that you can be this good in the last 10 minutes of the game. I don't think that's just random. It means they must have more depth than all these other guys.
Well, I think England made a big mistake, because when you have a guy like Messi and he's 39 years old, that you don't lay back and just let him play half court. You know, it's like letting the team play half court basketball. That's old. You got to make them run, and they didn't. And England just stopped making them run the whole length of the field, and I think that invigorated him.
They looked like they were playing with 10 or 9 guys. England.
Yeah.
Was that game inside? Is Atlanta inside?
Don't know if they were inside or not. I didn't see it. It was.
What was it? Is Atlanta? Atlanta got a top on the stadium. I don't know. I don't even know.
Yeah, couldn't tell you.
I'm not sure either. But we'll have our buddy Mike on Wednesday to go over the whole thing, eh?
All right, yeah. So you guys have a good weekend.
You too, bud.
Stay
out of the bad air. SP Futures down 70, NASDAQ is down 55. We'll be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 69. NASDAQ Futures down 550. This is after a crummy day yesterday. How crummy yesterday was. We had the S&P. We actually had the futures were down more than the stuff. But S&P was down 38. NASDAQ down 387. So we're pushing 1,000 points here at 550. Or 900 at least. 9 something. So that, you know, that is not good. It all kind of started over in Asia. Nikkei down 26.94. That's 4%. Hang Seng down 446, that's 1.8. But mainland China is down 118, that's 3. So we had earnings last night in Netflix. We predicted it down a little bit, but not down 11%. I didn't think it was going to be down that much, but it is. Don't you hate it when you're a little bit right and it goes too far? DAX down 140.6%. FTSE down 8, call that flat. I don't know what's going on with those guys. a kick around down 64.8. So the place you want to invest in today, I guess, is the FTSE. Bonds down 4 basis points, 4.53. So they interest rates are down a hair, but they're still over that 4.5 number, which used to be kind of a key number. Oil up another $1.95, 80.90, but it was over 80 yesterday, and it came down, came back up. But still, it's over $80. Gold down 350, 39.88, just ducked under 4,000. Silver down 73 cents, 55.45. Foreign exchange, we talked about this earlier. Dollar's right about where it was against the euro, 114. Same way with the British pound, 134. But the yen, 132.35, is still a bad number for those guys. Bitcoin down $1,000, 63,129. Ricky, we got for us traffic, weather, sport. Not much sports last night, like one baseball game, but there'll be stuff tonight.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 81 degrees right now with a high of 87. Warm with some sun. We have an afternoon thunderstorm, and wildfire smoke is causing some poor air quality. Tonight will be mostly clear and humid with a low of 76 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 92. Clouds and breaks of sun with a heavy thunderstorm late this afternoon. Tonight, chance of rain again and otherwise cloudy with a low of 82 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's is 11 minutes. We're looking at 25 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 19 minutes. We're looking at 15 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 294, 18 minutes. For the MLB, yesterday the Mets beat Phillies 4-1. That was the only baseball game we had. But today we got White Sox at Blue Jays at 6:15 p.m., Twins at Cubs at 7:05 p.m., and Cardinals at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, for the FIFA World Cup final is this Sunday, July 19 at 2 p.m., Argentina versus Spain. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
Ricky, what's your call? Cubs going to play if the air stays like this?
One more time?
Cubs going to play if the air stays like this?
Oh, I don't know. I know that weather does have a big influence on whether the game is played or not, right?
Well, I don't watch much baseball. They canceled the soccer game last night.
They did?
Yeah, a fire game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Maybe they will.
I mean, it's brutal. I mean, it's really bad. Carl, this is I say this is three times worse than it's like ever been here.
Well, the thing is, so there's a bunch of things going on here. Okay, of course, these some of this is just the confluence of atmospheric effects and such. You know, the super El Nino. By the way, that actually is a more pronounced effect than what I talked about last spring, which turned out to verify, which was that no hurricane impacts on the ConUS.
Well, this nasty one now, that it's spinning out to the ocean right now, right? Aaron or something?
Well, but not in a place that's going to cause.
That's what I'm saying. It's spinning out in the ocean, just
right,
like.
There's always going to be hurricanes. Okay, you're never going to get a situation where that's not the case. I said, you know, no impacts, and that's the case. And then I also said, though, I hope you like snow in the Midwest, right? And boy, did you get that, right?
Yeah.
That is likely to play out again. So there may be some kind of a little disturbance. There's something spinning out in the Gulf right now, but it's not going to turn into anything serious. It's going to rain. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, what's it, 9, 10, 12 inches of rain, you don't tell.
Well, you know, I mean, in a lot of places, people, you know, would like some rain. I mean, that's not a crazy idea. But
yep.
There's some low pressure that's out in the Gulf right now, but there's really, like, no...
They're talking it might be tropical storm that hits right kind of right where Rio Grande comes in.
And, well, actually, no. It's more over towards the Cedar Key area in Florida. It's over towards the eastern side.
Well, the one last night, the guy had it in the west. Did it move? It was almost right up against Mexico last night. Anyway. But it's a storm, yeah.
Yeah, it's a storm, so what? It's going to rain. And there is a rain problem in Texas. This is not an unusual thing to happen this time of year over there. Remember, there was those horrid floods that happened, a couple of years ago that got that camp.
It's the same. It's the same area.
And that is not an uncommon thing to have happen there. But the problem you have is that all of these crazies across the board, and not just here, but in Canada and other places,
have taken what we've known for 100 years to be decent wildfire management practices, controlled burns and things like this, and say, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't, you know, that's horrible. You know, excuse me, when you do that and you allow the fuel to accumulate, when it does get lit, the problems are much worse.
I don't think there's any comparison between management here in a national park and management in Canada. Canada is one big force. You can't, how do you manage the place? It's as big as Russia, for God's sake.
Okay, there is a Native Nation section up there, which is where one of these fires has gotten out of control, one of the big ones that's causing the problem right now. And those guys historically have had essentially a controlled burn kind of prescription. Well, the Canadian government stomped on that several years ago, and so as a result, you have fuel accumulation. Well, when it gets lit, now you're going to have trouble. And the other thing is they've had a decent number of eco-terrorists in Canada that have been deliberately lighting those fires. Now, I don't know that that's the case with these specific ones, but over the last few years, there have been several instances that have been proved arsons. And these nut job folks that, you know, boy, if you're worried about CO2, why in the hell would you be lighting stuff on fire? I mean, you know, there's
but no once point. Once the fire is out and you get the new growth, you get a lot of oxygen. But I don't think that's what they're doing for.
But you know, but you not only create a lot of CO2, you create an awful lot of other.
Well, depending on one of the spots in Canada, right? We went up to and a client that had three islands in the Bay of the Islands. Someday I'll tell you that story, Kyle. But it was really something. You had to go across the Mackinac Bridge, and you basically. Yeah. Went to the top of Lake Huron and ran down there about halfway, and then cut down, and Mantoulin Island and whatever. But the stuff they were going through up there had a big uprising with the Indians, Native Americans, because they were going to ban spear fishing, and that's how they But the one son says to me, "Well, you turn right, and you come down here. If you turn left, you got 3,000 miles of." Moose, mosquitoes, and trees, and then you hit Hudson's Bay. there's nothing up, you know, than the north side, you know, above some of that stuff. I mean, there's just nothing there. I mean, we went canoeing in Quetico Park, and I can't even imagine what a fire would do there, Carl. Because
I've spent a fair bit of time in the, you know, in the UP and, you know, all around the northern areas with a lot of trees and this. And boy, I'll tell you what, if that stuff gets lit, the only thing you can do is run.
Well, the reason why I didn't take racks for jacks, so I'm not a geology expert, but
right. When
you see some of the land here, and I guess we'll talk about the market in 2 seconds, but my brother, who did a couple of these canoe trips out of Marist High School, right, and he becomes a expert canoeist, you know, he'd be doing these 30-mile races and stuff, and I'm like, not me. So anyway, he talks, me and a buddy of mine, we graduated grad school, to going up with him in like May. So we go into Quetico Provincial Park, and of course my brother's all over this stuff. We rent these canoes, and it was 7 miles we had to go and we portaged into Canada. We went through customs in a canoe, right, which is kind of cool. Of course, I don't know how to paddle this thing for squat, right? But I'm in real good shape, and we go like about a mile, and my arms are cramping up, and I'm going, what the hell? How far have we gone? He goes, almost a mile. What do you mean? We're not there yet?
Yeah.
So finally, after a while, you learn that you use your legs and turn your body, and you can pretty much canoe all day if you do that, if you're in any kind of shape. But if you just use your arms, talk about a bicep cramp for about 30 seconds. You look at all the incredible land in the Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Ohio. You look at the ground here. It's their ground. The glaciers shoved all the really good.
Oh yeah.
But there, the whole thing is rocks. And everything. I mean, the whole.
Oh no, I know.
I mean, there's But the weird part is, you'll see a tree growing out of like a crack between two rocks, and you go,
yeah,
that's a hardy thing. But if you ever had a fire, how long would it take for that to happen again?
Oh, good question. Yeah, there's all sorts of you know, interesting things geologically and everything else. But yeah, there's
no dirt. It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
Right. It really is. It's quite bizarre.
But you know, But one thing I'll say, Carl, is you at night it's so calm, you can either look at the sky and see like a gazillion stars, or you can look at the water and get the same image.
Yeah, one of my favorite places. I'll give it away. I've been up there a few times. Algonquin Provincial Park in Canada, in Ontario, is one of the more regional
Where's that
places.
In relation to Quetico, left or right?
So if it's north of Toronto, probably.
Okay, because this is north of Duluth. It's north of Duluth.
Yeah, so this is north of Toronto, a few hours. Okay, so I mean, in your car, it's maybe 3-4 hours to get there. It is 100 miles from anything, all right? And as when I was younger, before we built up in every square meter we could find in the United States, right? I used to, up in northern Michigan, you used to be able to literally drive by star and moonlight at night, okay, without having your lights on.
Down to the beach in Michigan City at night and on a full moon night, you could play softball.
Yeah, I mean it was insane. Okay, so the thing that happened, over time, of course, more artificial light, it all kind of goes to hell, right, in that regard. And so I thought, though, as I'm getting older, I can't see as well anymore. I go up there camping with my daughter, and first night we're there, it's absolutely crystal clear, not a cloud in the sky, and I'm like, oh. There's nothing wrong with my eyes.
Yeah. It's all right. We gotta talk market. Last night, whatever. I mean, you got people say what they want to say, and we see how it's piling out. I mean, the president said he's killed the Biden inflation. Well, when he took office, inflation was 3. Now it's 3.5. So okay, yet another fib. And he also said there's more people working now than any time ever, which again is wrong. Because we had more people actually in early 2025 than now, so both of those things, and the thing that I don't would never expect him to say in a speech, but when he took office, we were 60.1% of the people that are available for work were working, and now we're down to 59, which is a horrendous slide. Now, I'm not saying it's all his fault, but don't say it isn't when it is. I mean, you're never going to fix somebody's broken leg, Carl, unless you realize the guy's got a broken leg, right? I mean, you can't just keep...
Okay.
What I'm saying is, how do we get what all this stuff... we've been talking forever about, okay, what about campaign financing? What about this? What about that? What about, this guy's, selling the information? What about, what we're doing? When are we going to get some people together and talk about the stuff that we talk about and say, all right, how are we going to fix some of this stuff?
Chief,
when is this going to, is it even possible? If it isn't, where do we go? Do we end up just...
Well, okay. We are... the answer to every problem for the last 40-ish years has been put it on the nation's credit card. Okay, it doesn't matter what the problem is. No matter what the issue is, none of those things matter. None of those matter at all. All right? But that era is over.
Well, but the flip side of that was
Chief,
we get investment for overseas. Now we're messing with those guys.
Point being, it's over because you can't do it anymore. It doesn't
work. We're now
in a generally rising rate environment, which means... that every time that you attempt to do this, the cost of that over time exponentially increases. Okay? That's where it is. So, we now are going to have to deal with these issues that all these things that we did are going to end up being puked back up into the general market. And as they do, the kind of valuation expansion that's happened all over the place is going to come back out. And you're seeing the start of it. And the rotational trade, Chief, you remember this, back from 2007, in 2008, before it all went to crap.
Speaking of rotational trade, I was talking about it with Kevin earlier.
It's precisely the same thing
that
happened.
Can you think of any reason yesterday, as bad as the market was, where the transportation average was up 3% and a sleepy transportation average.
Because it had been up less. And so people are trying to find the very same thing that they always end up doing, okay, which is let's rotate into something else because this too shall pass. Well, I got news for you. That ain't going to work.
Well, what you just said, again, sometimes you say stuff, it is so correct. I don't even think you know that. If you're in my business, I'm going to do a lot of this, but if somebody wandered in with, you know, say he's got one of these high value, say he's got a bunch of Micron. We don't have anybody like that, so I can say
yeah.
that. Say he's got a bunch of Micron, and I go, you know, this thing's kind of high. You might want to, you got 10,000 shares. You ever think about, I'd always ask the question this way, Carl. 10,000 shares would be, you know, say 10 million bucks. If I gave you 10 million bucks today, cash, and you had nothing in your account, would you tell me to put all 10 million into Micron? Because, I mean, it's not my stock, it's not my account, it's his or hers.
Right,
and
right.
Inevitably, they'll say, well, hell no. I'll say, okay, so why don't we lob out 2,000 shares or 500 just to do something? The first thing out of their mouth is, what are we going to buy? Where are we going to put it?
Right.
And at some point, and again, I'm not smart enough to pick the points, at some point you just say, you know what? My brother Dan's going to go to the Treasury on Monday, and that's where we're going to put it for 90 days. and if we want to buy something the next day, we could get out of the Treasury in a nanosecond. You know, so that's not – why? Don't we want another stock? Because that's all people know from, you know, 2000 on, really. Really, maybe even more than that. Maybe from 68 on, for God's sake.
Here's the
82
thing.
On, sorry, not 68.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, that you look at. All right, so, like, you know, you asked the question about the transports.
Yeah.
Okay. The transports in the 2007-2008 time frame, before it all blew up, okay, which was the, you know, sort of the top of the, it was at by anyone's standard, fair and reasonable valuations, right, fully valued, not the low end, because this was, you know, before the kaboom, right? Before the kaboom, the transports traded right in the neighborhood of about 4,500 to 5,000 in that general range. Okay, they were, you know, they moved some, but they're in that general range. Where are they right now?
They were up. I'll have to dig them up here. I don't
care. 22.8. Okay, so you're telling me that over that period of time, that the actual value of transportation in our economy, the real value of transportation in our economy, we've expanded the economy by a factor of what, four?
No, we have not. Well, we have a lot more combinations, so the prices might be higher.
Well, prices might, but we yeah. certainly have not expanded the amount of stuff.
Well, if you have the situation where you keep raising the prices and you tell everybody else that they're doing good, don't you get tired all day long of listening to people tell you how well you're doing?
Well, you know, funny thing, right? So, anyway, point being that here we are in the, you know, in the today world, right? And they're rotating into here. Now, what happens when that turns out to be a load of hot garbage? Well,
is there any chance, what Kevin was talking earlier, you know, and Kevin doesn't make stuff up. So is there any chance that he keeps seeing these, from these regional manufacturing indices in the state, you know, the Empire State, he's seeing those areas.
Yeah, I look at those too, by the way.
He's seeing those things percolating to the plus side. I don't look at them that much. Is there somewhat of a? I can only tell from my nephew's kind of in the business of actually what he does is he's got like these all these big clients, and if a machine part breaks from 30 years ago, they'll make them apart. You know, he knows how to do the anyway. So, but he goes 2-3 years ago, they were really busy, and now all of a sudden it's just okay. It's not anything. But he's not, you know, it's his one area here in Chicago. Is Kevin right that there's this little bit of a groundswell building on this stuff or not? I think he's probably right, but I don't know how much it is.
Well, he's right in that there is some of the, you know, Trump, one of Trump's things that he made a lot of noise about is trying to force manufacturing back into the United States. Okay. Now, depending on where you look and depending on what section of manufacturing you're talking about, yeah, there has been some reshoring, and that's going to show up in those ISM industries, the regional ones. So it is going to show up there on the good side. And there is some of that, and it is real to some extent, all right? I just got back from chasing the train, and in the process of doing that, I drove through a lot of really what used to be industrial towns, and most of them are now sad little caricatures of what they used to be. The merchants there loved that train coming through. They probably did more business in, 3 hours than they've done.
Carl, if you really want to get a handle on some of that, you ever done any of these rail-to-trail things?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a couple in Ohio I did where you go through all these little towns and what used to be the railroad, duh.
Yeah.
And you see, where the old sawmill used to be, where this used to be, and it's pretty scary.
Well, but then on the other hand, there were a couple of these places I went through where, hey, what's that shiny building over there? Okay, and it's a manufacturing concern. They're making stuff.
Yep.
Right, and it's operating. It's not shuttered. It's running. There's cars in the parking lot, and there's a guard in the shack, and they're actually doing. They're producing things. There's noise coming out of the building. It's not idle. It's there, and it's actually making things, and so it all is not lost, but as we go into a world where cash on cash becomes the only metric by which you survive, because it's the only true profit when you get down to it, and the financing games become less and less viable and disappear, and it will not be something that is a short-term phenomenon. We're talking about what's going to be the case for the next 30 to 40 years. As people come to recognize that these excess premiums that have built up over all of these years of leverage, they're all going to come back out, Chief.
Well, the inflation numbers are, Kevin and I talked.
Well, the inflation numbers are driven by part of that financing game, though,
without a doubt.
Because here's the thing: if I can get somebody, you see these statistics, some of them are truly frightening. The average American family, the average American person, does not have an extra $100.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so what does he do? He drives the credit card up.
Yep.
All right, and this only works as long as the leverage turn can continue to be cranked.
Well, it's never going to work at 18%. It works for somebody else at 3%.
Well, but I mean, yeah, 18, you're lucky. It could be 24, right? So the thing is that as this, and then what do so many people do? What have they done over the years? Oh, well, we'll refinance a house and take out a HELOC.
Well, prices drop 20%, we got a problem.
Well, these house prices are going to drop by half.
Well, Carl, what I try and do with the different people we have, it's a very big learning experience sitting where I'm sitting here. You're going to talk to you one day and somebody else the next day. It's almost scary when you talk to a guy like Kevin, who's basically dedicated himself into helping people out that are making $18-$20 an hour, having different types of things, where at the end of 3-4 years they're making $40 an hour and doing a hell of a lot better. But I cannot. I don't want to say too many nice things about him because he might get a big head. But I can't help but. But acknowledge the good of that, and yet I look at the other side of my life, the economic part of it, and what's going on, and not that he doesn't or you don't, and I look at, by the time the 3 years are up and that person is now making $40 or 35, and 40 is probably too high, but 35 an hour, God, it's still like pissing in Lake Michigan. I mean, one of my clients told me yesterday they bought a listener. They just went out and bought a new Lexus. It was $72,000. I mean, Kevin can get that person to $60 an hour in 2 years, which would be spectacular. We're not even close to how far this has run away from people in the last 10 years.
Keith, it's not just that, okay? Let me give you... This just popped up on my screen because I have this thing that goes out and hunts new listings, real estate stuff in my area, okay? Here's a house. It was built 2007. It's in my neighborhood. I know exactly where it is. I run past it all the time when I'm out exercising, okay? I've seen this house. It's a nice place. It's in a good location. My neighborhood is a nice place to raise a family. All those kinds of good things. Okay, 2007, it went for $185,000. It was listed in late 2019, just before the crazy, for $285,000. It sold for $260,000 7 months later. So it was overpriced and sat on the market because at $285,000 it was just too rich. Okay, went at $260,000. It just popped up this morning at $499,000.
And, right? And from what Audrey and now, Nancy will say, it's gonna be sold to somebody here from Chicago who bought a place 10 years ago or 20 years ago for $150,000 and just sold their place for $550,000, and there's gonna be a cash transaction.
Well, maybe.
It's not gonna be Susie and Joe that are 30 years old that are both working and can put up a $100,000 down and pile into that place unless they right. get,
Now, from what I see of the pictures and stuff like that, it has a couple of things about the layout that would make me go, could I live with it? Yeah, but do I really like it? No. But most places are like that to some extent, right? There's something that you go, it's kind of okay, whatever. Fine, but there's no question that it's a nice house. All right. I mean,
what you're,
in a good place to raise a family. Yeah. If you're a young couple, want to do that. The problem is at that price, there ain't no young couple.
That's exactly right.
That can buy it. All right. So now here's the thing, though. At given the median incomes around our area, all right. Now this is an above median house. All right. I mean, it's a little bigger. It's not huge.
Well, median's 400. It's 500. So it's nicer.
I'm saying it's nicer. I mean, it's 1,600 square feet, a 3-2. Okay, so two kids and a couple, and everybody and everything fits reasonably. It's not a bougie kind of place by any stretch of the imagination, but it's nice, nicely apportioned. All right, where does this settle out when all's said and done? In the low to mid twos.
Probably. I mean, but the people that have this value, it's like the stock value. They think it's theirs. It can't go the other way.
It's only yours if somebody will give it to you.
Well, right? What's happening? We'll talk about this on Tuesday, but it's even changing some of, I won't say my views, and I want everything to be even for everybody. I always have.
That's never okay.
Reality. But I always thought it was pretty even on the trading floor, and I was willing to take my chances. But that was my life.
I get it.
But now. Just in regards to taxation, you hear all these calls for millionaire tax and this kind of tax. Right. Of course, a millionaire is not, it's reaching the point, Carl, I would never 10 years ago have even thought something like that, or we think I'm this flaming Democrat or socialist, I'm not. I would never go for anything like that, but if this continues, this constant dragging of money out of some people and at the end of the day, if only 1,000 people have all the dough, which is kind of where we're going, you got to rob the bank because that's where the money is. I mean, how much are you gonna? How much more can you tax somebody who makes $50,000 a year? I mean, you're already screwing them with parking fees, meters, with tolls, with gas tax. I mean, as the Irish say, you can't get blood out of a turnip. At some point, right. I mean, you just can't. And yet somebody else, maybe has, who is the person who had all the Las Vegas sand stock? No, the guy died and gave it, whatever. If you got this piggy move, there's people here that are multimillionaires that have never paid tax on anything because the stock went up and their dad died.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not trying to raise taxes on people, but at some point I go, that's where the money is. I mean, you're not going to get it out of the guy down the block working at McDonald's. He doesn't have it. Right.
Well. Okay. So I mean.
I mean, I'm conflicted on this, but.
But you're looking at this the wrong, from my perspective.
I don't want to look at it this way. I'm saying, but at some point, I got to tax Musk because that's where the money is. I mean, duh, right?
Well, how about, yeah? Except that Musk stole it.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying at some point.
Well, wait a minute. Now there's a big difference here. All right, if you earned it honestly. By having a better, faster, cheaper, right? Or just more
reliably. I'm with
you.
Or you worked Saturdays and the other guy didn't? That's supposed to be the way it is.
You're making roller bearings and the other guy's making trash, right? And yours are better than his, and you win, and you get the business, and you make money.
That's my world. Just we're not in it anymore.
Elon did exactly none of that
right.
with a single penny of what he's got today. So I have
Starlink is pretty good.
Excuse me, without the cross subsidy from the government,
well,
buying
true.
The launches,
I get
he
it.
Couldn't have ever put those things in space.
I get it.
But that is the only profitable line of business that SpaceX has.
All right,
because of that.
All right, to be continued on Tuesday. Joel won't be here Tuesday, so we got you the whole hour Tuesday. So
by the way, if you bought the if you got the IPO allocation of SpaceX, you're underwater.
Yeah, I get it. So try not to breathe till Tuesday. By the way,
I'm fine down here.
Oh, you guys don't have any of this?
No, we don't have any of it. I can't smell it at all outside.
Last night I walked out. I said, "Who's got the fireplace going?" Two years ago, when it happened, you saw the sky was a little hazy. You could never smell it. Now you can smell it.
Well, I toyed with the idea of going and playing in Upper Michigan. I'm going to be doing that for a little while here.
SP Futures now down 78, NASDAQ Futures down 560. This does not look 580. This does not look like a good day. Maybe we'll bounce back. Carl, talk at you Tuesday. Have a good weekend. Ricky, nice job as usual. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.